we start in the emergency department is critically important.
That's a mouthful.
There's a lot of debate, particularly about non-shockable rhythms.
Would that improve neurologic outcome in patients who had coma?
Those patients don't do well. That's what we care about, right? It's not just survival, it's good neurologic outcome.
We've already been doing this.
Welcome back to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. Mike Winters from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. So happy to be joined by my co-host, Dr. Peter W., Dr. Rob Rodriguez, and Dr. John Greenwood. Now, guys, it's been a few weeks since we've chatted on the podcast. John did an outstanding interview for our last episode on extubating in the ED. Let me see how you guys are doing over these past few weeks. Peter, you and I were together in Arizona for the Critical Points Conference. How did that wrap up?
That wrapped up great. It was a change of venue, so it was in Phoenix, and it went incredibly well. Just a great learning opportunity for all involved.
It was. I would wholeheartedly agree. Great, great atmosphere. The participants, attendees did an outstanding job, so engaged, asking questions. Maybe it's a little too early, but any insight on the Critical Points 2020, or are you still working through locations?
Still working on locations and the best state. Try and get it out through the podcast and through other means to let everybody know. Thank you.
All right. Well, when you know the date, let us know and we will get it out here on CCPEM. Rob, how are things on the West Coast?
Doing great. We are full into the fall now, which is pretty much the nicest time of year out here. Indian summer type thing, and everything's going great.
I would agree. For me, the best time of the year is that October through December time period. We've got a lot of great stuff coming up in terms of family fun, activities, holiday time. Hopefully everybody is planning to spend time with family and friends. John, how are things just north of Baltimore and Philly?
Philly's great. I was just actually at a trip to Berlin, Germany, where I was at European Society Intensive Care Medicine, presenting some research there, and got to actually be in the audience for this trial to be reported. So that was pretty cool.
Well, you're segueing into our educational offering, the podcast topic for this episode. Now, many of you have listened. A few months ago, we had Dr. Mathieu on to discuss his thoughts and analysis on the COAC trial, discussing post-cardiac arrest cath in patients without evidence of an ST elevation MI on their EKG. John, you did an outstanding discussion with Drs. Walker and Johnson, who published an article in your Critical Care or EM Clinics of North America that was dedicated to critical care in the ED. And in that discussion, you alluded to this particular article on targeted temperature management in patients with non-shockable rhythm. So this article is just out, fresh off the press, about a week or so ago, EPUB ahead of print in the New England Journal of Medicine. And the lead author is Dr. Lascaru, and it's titled Targeted Temperature Management for Cardiac Arrest with Non-Shockable Rhythm. And John, since you heard him present the findings of this study, let me turn to you and give us some background.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So as we kind of talked about before in the other podcasts, targeted temperature management is really one component, albeit a critical component, of managing the post-arrest patient. Now, in 2015, the ILCOR guidelines recommend targeted temperature management 32 or 36 degrees for all patients with a depressed GCS or coma after resuscitation from an arrested state. And that variability in temperature was really caused by the TTM trial published just a few years ago. But there's a lot of debate, particularly about non-shockable rhythms. In the ED in particular, they're predominant in particularly in cardiac arrest patients who come into the ED. And unfortunately, they're often met with a very poor prognosis. In fact, only 2 to 15% of patients, depending on where you work, often have a good neurologic outcome, because that's what we care about, right? It's not just survival, it's good neurologic outcome. So the use of targeted temperature management in patients with non-shockable or basically non-cardiac causes, non-shockable rhythms being asystole or PEA, have had inconclusive effects. And this has been seen amongst multiple studies. There's probably about 5 to 10 studies and trials that have shown either a beneficial effect or no effect, and in some cases have suggested harm in these patients. And it can be a little bit confusing. Like, why would a therapy shown to have such variable effects And I think that's because the patients that often come into the emergency department with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest are usually really, really sick. So it's not like the usual cardiac cause arrest with a rapid V-fib that gets shocked out and back to a sinus rhythm and taken to cath. These patients are really heterogeneous, and they can have variations in the amount of low flow time or CPR time or downtime without CPR. So these patients are really difficult to study in a trial setting. So I commend Dr. Lascaro for doing this study because it's going to be really, really helpful in guiding us in managing our patients. Now, there's the use and benefit of TTM in patients with cardiac arrest due to non-cardiac cause. Essentially, looking at all these studies, we can say it's uncertain up until maybe now about what we should do in terms of targeted temperature management in post-arrest care.
Outstanding background, John. So just to lead into this particular study, the objective of the hyperion trial was to assess whether moderate therapeutic hypothermia at 33 degrees Celsius as compared with targeted normothermia at 37 degrees Celsius, would that improve neurologic outcome in patients who had coma and who were successfully resuscitated from cardiac arrest and presented with a non-shockable rhythm of either asystole or PEA? So Rob, tell us about the nuts and bolts of the study itself.
Yeah, Mike. So this was an investigator-initiated, open-label, blinded, outcome assessor, pragmatic, multi-center, randomized control trial. That's a mouthful. But that's basically the general descriptor of the type of trial this would have to be. In other words, can't really engage in a blinded cooling hypothermia type trial in real time. But otherwise, it was a randomized control trial conducted in 25 ICUs in France. It was a pretty nice even mix between 11 university hospitals and 14 community hospitals. In terms of the inclusion criteria, there were adults, in other words, greater than 18 years of age. They were resuscitated from out-of-hospital cardiac arrest or in-hospital cardiac arrest. And this specifically looked at patients who had non-shockable rhythms from any cause. They had to be in a coma or GCS less than 8 at the time of ICU admission. They excluded patients who had a no-flow time of greater than 10 minutes before CPR. In other words, a downtime of greater than 10 minutes before CPR was initiated. They excluded patients who had low flow time of greater than 60 minutes from the time of CPR to ROSC. So in other words, that group of patients who had prolonged CPR before achieving ROSC. They excluded patients who had hemodynamic instability defined as a norepinephrine infusion of greater than 1 mg/kg/min, sort of moderate dose of norepinephrine. They excluded patients who had a moribund condition, sort of loosely defined moribund condition. Severe hepatic dysfunction patients were excluded. Pregnant patients were excluded. Inmates and patients who were under guardianship were excluded. And then, of course, patients whose next of kin declined consent or declined to participate. And so it was one-to-one randomization. In the moderate therapeutic intervention group with moderate therapeutic hypothermia, targeted to about 33 degrees centigrade, and they maintained hypothermia for 24 hours. Each center was allowed to follow its own protocol with either whatever they happened to use at that center, including active internal cooling with devices, active external cooling or with a device, or active external cooling without a device. And then after 24 hours, they initiated slow rewarming to about 36.5 to 37.5 degrees centigrade, and they maintained that for 24 hours. And they used standard sedation and neuromuscular blockade according to each center's protocol. So in other words, the intervention was sort of what we typically use for shockable rhythm cardiac arrest, and each center was allowed to use their own, what they typically use for those type of patients. The control group was normothermic group, and their target temperature was basically normal, 37 degrees more or less, anywhere between 36.5 and 37.5 degrees centigrade. And they maintained that for 48 hours. And sedation was given routinely only during the first 12 hours after randomization. In terms of the primary outcome, this is an outstanding choice and pretty much standard choice for primary outcome. It was survival with favorable 90-day neurologic outcome assessed using CPC and defined as a CPC of 1 or 2. And this was assessed using a semi-structured telephone interview. Secondary outcomes were mortality, mechanical ventilation duration, ICU and hospital length of stay, infections, and other adverse events. Peter, do you want to take us through the results?
Yeah, Rob, thanks for teeing that up for me. When we look at the results, it's basically 584 patients underwent randomization, and of those, 581 patients were in the final analysis. In the moderate hypothermia group, there were 284 patients. In the normothermia group, 297 patients. Characteristics were evenly balanced between both of these groups. The case of cardiac arrest was non-cardiac in two-thirds of the patients studied. Circulatory shock was present in almost 60% of the cases, so those requiring vasopressors or fluids to bolster their blood pressure. The most common cause of death was the withdrawal of life support in these cases. When we look at temperature management, the moderate hypothermia group began after about 16 minutes after randomization. They had an intravascular catheter, was used in about 15% of the cases, so not the majority. Closed loop surface cooling device in the majority of those cases, 47.9%. And then basic external cooling device with no closed loop in 37%. The mean temperature between 12 and 24 hours was 33.5 degrees Celsius. In the normothermia group, the intravascular catheter use in about 15%, closed loop surface cooling device in 34%, basic external cooling device with no closed loop in 51%, so the majority there. And then the mean temperature between 12 and 24 hours was 37, so it looks like they reached their goal there. When we look at the primary outcome, remember what this was, favorable neurological survival at 90 days. So that's the gold standard, right? In the moderate hypothermia group, 10.2%. So you got to like that compared to the normothermia group of 5.7 with P equal 0.04. When we look at the secondary outcomes, so for mortality, the moderate hypothermia group, 81.3%. And then the normothermia group, 83.2%. So the duration of mechanical ventilation had no difference between the two groups. ICU length of stay, no difference between the two groups. And then adverse events, equally, no difference between the two groups studied.
So it sounds like, Peter, the take-home message or take-home results were that favorable neurologic survival at 90 days was better and statistically better in the patients who got moderate hypothermia. Is that correct?
That's correct. The moderate hypothermia group, again, had better, what our gold standard, what we're saying, you know, survival and neurological outcome being better for that group with the more intensive temperature management, the lower temperature compared to the normothermia group.
So you guys have done an outstanding job laying the background, the nuts and bolts of the study, and now going through the results. Just a few minutes here. The limitations, now these are as identified by the authors in the study. They do note that their primary outcome was assessed using a telephone interview rather than face-to-face review and examination of the patients themselves to determine that CPC score. They also note that a fair amount of their patients did in fact have body temperatures that got above 38 after this period of TTM. So within the randomization and interventions, whether it be the normothermia or moderate hypothermia group, some of those patients did have elevated temperatures that may have portended out to affect that 90-day outcome. They also noted that they, for the moderate hypothermia group, they did use TTM a little bit longer, so about 56 to 64 hours in comparison to 48 hours in the normothermia group. And then the last thing, which I think is very important, they do acknowledge that their fragility index value for this study was in fact 1, which they suggest that even an outcome change in one patient may make the difference in the primary outcome no longer statistically significant. So some important limitations. John, I'd also be interested to hear what folks were talking about overseas as this study was presented.
Yeah, so great points by everyone. I think that one of the things, the fragility index did come up in particular. What the lead author did say, though, is that there were either three or four subjects that dropped out of the study. All of them were in the targeted temperature management group, not in the normothermia group. So I think what he was suggesting was that if TTM, which we believe there's biologic rationale and there's decent evidence for, does improve neurologic outcome, that this may have favored the TTM result a little bit more. And I think a lot of the audience appreciated that response. But again, the big thing that they pointed out as well was that these were a majority out-of-hospital cardiac arrests and really, really sick patients. The rate of cardiogenic shock and the number of patients with asystole, those patients don't do well. So the fact that they found an improved neurologic outcome without mortality differences, quite impressive. And then lastly, the complication rates was really interesting. I think a lot of times we get pushback from maybe consultants about, well, there's going to be an increased risk of pneumonia and bleeding. Didn't appear to be much difference between the two arms. So that was good to see. So in my perspective, I think this is a great addition to the literature. You know, I think there's a lot of questions left to answer about how we can personalize TTM for the post-arrest patient, being how do we prescribe it in terms of depth, duration, that sort of thing. But this is a step in the right direction.
I would say another, as you indicated, great addition to the post-cardiac arrest literature. We've had several things this year, and the authors here conclude that in their study, the use of moderate hypothermia, so at 33 degrees, did in fact lead to a higher percentage of patients who survived with favorable neurologic outcome at 90 days, and they reported a number needed to treat with this intervention of 22. So John, you kind of gave us your thoughts. Peter and Rob, your overall interpretation of this study and its application to clinical practice.
Yeah, I would just say this. I think that this is helpful to us. And for those people who are listening and thinking, you know what, this is a little bit too much, I'll let the ICU handle this. I would just really state that this phenomenon of therapeutic momentum, which is what we start in the emergency department is more likely to carry through to the ICU, is critically important. And whether we're talking about low tidal volume ventilation, whether we're talking about targeted oxygen delivery on people in mechanical ventilation or sedation for those patients who are intubated, this falls in that same realm. This is something that we should be doing in the emergency department and handing this off to the ICU group. I think this helps us with this subset of patients to address those needs.
Well said. Rob, how about you?
Yeah, so those are outstanding points, Peter and John. So what this really shows to me, we're already doing this. I don't know if at your institution you were cooling PA arrests and other type of arrests. We've already been doing this, but it's nice to have evidence to back it up now and to say that we should be doing this. So that to me is the biggest point, is that we now have a really well done study that shows that we should be cooling these patients or maintaining at least moderate hypothermia in this group of patients as well. And we're going to get answers, as you mentioned, Mike, we're going to get answers to some of the other questions, some trials coming up about how long we should be doing this, as well as the best temperature. I know that there's certainly a trial in the works now for that first endpoint about how long we should maintain hypothermia. So I love this study. I think it supports what we've been doing at the two institutions that I work at.
Gentlemen, my thanks for reviewing this very timely and very important article with respect to post-cardiac arrest care. Any of you that have questions, please shoot us those questions through the website. We'd be happy to get your answers and any additional references that you may need. So I think that's going to do it for this podcast. A great discussion. Looking forward to talking with all of you on our next podcast here, Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. This is Mike Winters once again at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. We'll talk to you on our next podcast. Bye for now.